Hi, I'm Joe Feeks, editor of Pig Health Today, and with me is Dr. Scott Dee from Pipestone Veterinary Services in Pipestone, Minnesota. Great to see you, Scott.
Thanks, Joe. Appreciate another chance to visit with you.
You bet. Well, you know, as a journalist, I like a good developing story, and that's exactly what we have with the research that you've been doing over the last couple of years, where you've been actually taking viruses or surrogates of viruses and seeing how they can survive a trans-Pacific or transatlantic crossing, whether it be from Asia or from Europe, and then following them into the heartland of the United States. And it seems like your research was, it's always well-timed, but when you take a look at what's going on with African swine fever now, outbreaks in China, we've seen them in Belgium, it seems like this is more timely than ever to be to keep our guard up on feed ingredients.
It's a crisis, to put it mildly. It's something everybody has to be concerned of because there are several ways this virus could enter the United States or the continent of North America. So we really have to be careful.
And it's not just a crisis in terms of the disease or the risk of the disease coming into the United States, but we really don't have any other options but to import some of these ingredients, right? Because like a lot of the vitamins, or most of the vitamins, are made in China, for example.
True, and if you put foreign animal diseases in perspective from what we've learned from other countries, it's billions of dollars in loss, not just to agriculture, but to the grain markets, the livestock markets in total, the tourism. Nobody wants to come to these countries with these foreign animal diseases, be it foot and mouth, be it hog cholera. And it would be the same with African swine fever. It's been estimated at billions of dollars of losses to the United States across many different industries, not just the swine industry. So it's a big deal.
Tell me what you know about African swine fever. I mean, fortunately, you haven't experienced it firsthand, at least not in this country. But what is it that we really need to be concerned about with this virus, should it ever get here?
It's a very large, stable virus, and so it can survive outside the host, in the ground, in meat, under extreme pHs and temperatures. So once you get it, it's tough to get rid of it. Very few disinfectants can deactivate it. There's no vaccine, so there's really no way to immunize or protect herds prior to infection. And it's also got, depending on its strain, a very high level of mortality. And finally, number one probably, if we ever got it, it would shut down all our exports. All our exports of pork would stop immediately when the diagnosis was made.
Have you seen a virus like this before? Does it remind you of anything?
It's in its family all by itself. So that's why we couldn't use a surrogate in our transboundary model. We actually had to work with Dr. Megan Niederwerder at Kansas State University, where they have a BSL-3 facility called the Biosecurity Research Institute, and she was able to use the Georgia strain of African swine fever virus in our model, moving from simulating movement from Poland to the United States. So thanks to Megan, Dr. Bob Rowland, as well as their respective lab groups for helping us with that. They did a great job.
I guess the good news is that because of the lessons from the porcine epidemic diarrhea virus, we're a lot more prepared for managing something like this if it should come here.
That's exactly right. That's the advantage we have. Unlike PED, where everything was so reactive, we were learning on the fly. We were already infected. We had to work basically almost backwards. This time we're moving forward. We don't have the virus yet. We've got information on its survival in feed ingredients. We understand feed ingredients now as a risk factor, which we didn't understand prior to PED. So we have a whole bunch of data that we never had before in the case of PED, which I think has just changed the whole perspective of how the industry is working together.
What can or should producers be doing right now to protect not just the industry, but even their own interests? I mean, everybody's talking about biosecurity for all diseases, but I mean, you've really got to raise the bar if you're talking about something like African swine fever.
Yeah, I think producers can do a few things. Back when PED hit, biosecurity just accelerated. Everybody stepped up and really put all the mechanical biosecurity measures into place. Visitors, trucks, supplies, they need to do that again. I think that's taken a little bit of a slide because we haven't had the PDs kind of calm down, although it's still around. So they can do that first off. They can talk to their vet and learn about this new disease because it's a really old virus that hasn't had any research for many, many years. And then they can start talking to their nutritionists and at their feed millers and start asking questions about where do our ingredients come from that are used to put my diets together. So those are three things they can do right off the bat, and they'll get a bunch of good information within a few days.
But what can you do with that information? Because the short answer to that, where are the vitamins coming from? China.
Yeah.
What do they do about that?
That's a $1 million question. There are certain ingredients that are only made in China, B vitamins, for example. We have to have a way to bring them in. We have no manufacturing here in the United States. Now, option one would be find non-Asian sources, which is much easier to say than to actually do. Some of these items are only made in China. The other thing is, I think we have to develop a concept which Luke Minion, our CEO, brought forward as a challenge to our team of being responsible importers, meaning how do we scientifically introduce essential ingredients from high-risk countries to minimize risk? How do we do that? So what's the platform for getting that done? Because Luke clearly saw we have to have some way of bringing these ingredients into the country. How do we do it right? I really want to shout out to the feed industry on this one. You know, in the PED days, everybody was running scared. The feed industry is really proactive right now, and they are looking at their procedures at their manufacturing plants in Asia. How are they doing things? What are the quality control, quality assurance steps in place? What temperatures are we using? What pHs are we using? How does that relate to virus inactivation? They're looking at storage time. How can I potentially hold this material to enhance viral decay before we ship it? What's the shipping time it's going to take to bring it to the U.S.? And then how can I either mitigate by a feed additive or by further storage to really try to make that viral decay curve go as fast as they possibly can before the material goes to the mill? So that's so different than how the industry's thought in the past.
With all the work that you have done tracking viruses and their activity after they've made a trans-Pacific or transatlantic crossing, is there anything in particular that you've learned about African swine fever, or is there something about that virus that has stood out more from the others in this research that you've been doing?
In our model, we always have, you know, as you know, we've got different feed ingredients. We put the same amount of virus in them. We follow them over time and see if they're still alive. We count how much is left at the end of the journey. We also have a control we call the stock virus control, which is the virus in the container in the absence of a feed matrix. So it's just seeing, can the virus live across our simulated oceanic journey by itself, or does it need the covering or protective layer of a feed matrix? And in the 12 viruses we've tested, ASFV is the only one that survived the journey on its own. All 11 of the other ones, including Seneca, our foot and mouth surrogate, PERS, many other ones, they all had to have a feed matrix of some type to protect them perhaps from the environmental challenges of that type of a trip. So that shows you how stable this virus is as compared to the other viruses that we've at least worked with so far.
Wow, that's scary. What's the takeaway on that then? I mean, so it's not just feed as a possible vector, it could be almost anything.
Oh my, yes. This virus lives in meat for months. Frozen meat probably forever. So meat imports are very, very dangerous risk to the country. That's got to be, that's where I really commend the Border Patrols and the USDA and every FDA. They're searching at airports, finding illegal contraband coming in. A lot of it's meat product. So there's been a ramp up of that. There's been a ramp up of not allowing any meat products in from African swine fever positive countries that are actively going through an epidemic. So I commend the government for that role. So there's been some other things that probably even a higher risk than feed grains and such or feed ingredients, it's the meat. So we really got to look at that too.
And then it really becomes a consumer issue. I mean, this is well outside of agriculture. People going over to Europe, for example, buying smoked meats or whatever.
Sure.
This could be a vector.
Sure. definitely. Yep. So that's, there's the Beagle Brigade, and you know, you see them in the airport. They got a big job to do. They're sniffing suitcases for meat.
All right. Well, hats off to the Beagles. We need them now more than ever. We've been talking to Dr. Scott Dee. He's Director of Research for Pipestone Veterinary Services. Scott, thanks again.